A report earlier this year detailed the massive problem the government has with updating its outdated technology across hundreds of federal departments and agencies. Just how outdated? The Defense Department still uses floppy disks to store data for a critical nuclear command and control system. And while most federal employees use more up-to-date technology on a day-to-day basis, the government lags well behind the private sector in most tech areas. Joining us to discuss this is Dan Tangalini. He is president of Seamless Docs Federal, a company which specializes in helping governments go paperless with secure online documents. He's the former administrator of the General Services Administration. Dan, good to see you again.
Thank you, Kojin.
Dan, there's a GAO report this past spring that got a lot of attention. It talked about legacy IT investments that are increasingly obsolete. Tell us a little bit about that report.
Well, the big issue is that the complexity of delivering government services in a digital age is only increasing. And so while over the last 20, 30, 40 years we've been investing in replacing kind of traditional office and desk and paper-driven processes with more digital processes, the speed of that transformation has really picked up in the last 5 or 10 years. Think about the technology you carry around the pocket. Think about the way you interact with almost any service and service provision now in your personal life. The problem is that the systems, the structures, the procurement mechanisms, the approaches, the oversight rules that we have for purchasing new and updating systems within the federal government haven't been keeping up with that speed of transformation.
That report says that in 2015, the U.S. agency spent more than $80 billion in IT expenditures, but out of that sum, about $60 billion, or 75%, went to maintain what are essentially outdated IT systems. Is that correct?
Yeah, and it's a big challenge of the way our appropriations process works, our budgeting system works, and then even the procurement system works, that in order to get the money necessary to make that next level of investment, you have to find that resource within the resources you have. We've been operating under continuing resolutions. That's the way the government's going to be funded for the foreseeable future. We've had sequestration and shutdowns. So getting the resources necessary put together so that you can make the transition from one system to another, because at some point you're going to have to run two systems at the same time. That's hard for agencies to do. So what happens is they have to keep the systems they have. They have to keep maintaining those systems. In many cases, they're the only people left in the world running those systems. So the cost of maintaining them begins to get higher and higher.
Also joining us in studio is Fidra Crusoe. She is the Chief Innovation Officer of Libra Group, an international business group operating across six sectors. She's the former commissioner of the Technology Transformation Service at the General Services Administration. Fidra, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We just talked about the dollar cost, which is stunning, but presumably there are other costs to continuing to keep older systems running. Lost productivity, things like that?
Absolutely. I think it's not just the dollar cost, but it's also what is the dollar buying you? We have some great statistics out there that out of all the federal IT that's been over the last decade, only 6% has actually succeeded of those projects that are 10 million plus. Only 6% are successful, which means that we are not leveraging our technology and our spend the right way.
You recently stepped down from your post as Commissioner of the Technology Transformation Service at the GSA. It was your role to tackle the issue of upgrading technology for the government. Can you talk a little bit about that job and the big picture challenges in modernizing government technology?
Absolutely. A few months before I left public service, we stood up the Technology Transformation Service, which is designed to house some of the president's most successful digital initiatives, including the Presidential Innovation Fellowship Program 18F, which Dan started, along with a handful of other really exemplary people, as well as some technology products that are going to be pivotal to the government's transformation, like login.gov and data.gov. This organization is meant to be not only to institutionalize what the good things that have happened to date in the digital movement in government, but also to be a launching pad for future endeavors. And we hope that it'll be the place where we can receive congressional funding. It'll be the place that'll be an asset for all of technologists across government as they move forward.
You came from the private sector and you didn't know a great deal about the ins and outs of the federal government's technology. So what struck you about what you saw when you came on board?
the federal government was a black box, and it's thanks to people like Dan and a few others that I got a glimpse into what it's like in the government. I believe that we don't have a great idea of what's outside. One example is, when the Hillary Clinton email scandal came out in the spring, my initial reaction was, of course, government IT doesn't work. She had her own email server. The uproar in the public is very different. I think people don't realize exactly how broken government IT is. And I definitely was one of those people.
800-433-8850 is the number to call if you'd like to join this conversation. Do you work for the federal government? What grade would you give the technology used in your office or agency? Has your department or agency updated its technology recently? Do you think it should? 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. It works. You can also send us a tweet at Kojo Show or go to our website, kojoshow.org. Ask a question or make a comment there. Dan, how important is it to get the basics like email right? And what other issues did you experience regularly when you were there?
Well, I think that the challenge of email is a fundamental one. I know that there are just tremendous, hardworking, smart people who are confronting very, very difficult infrastructure issues, who are confronting very, very difficult acquisition issues. I was talking with a CIO of an agency who's confronting, the CR issue and the potential for additional shutdown issues. How do you plan around that? And the biggest challenge, I think, to really evolving government IT and making the kind of necessary investments is having some ability to plan. One of the exciting things about the TTS proposal that was in the president's budget and I know is being considered on the Hill is creating a revolving fund that would actually provide resources for people to make investments so that they could buy the new product and then turn off the old one and reap the savings from not having to try to maintain these legacy systems that no one else is operating.
Fred, I want to get back to email for a second because we don't want to give the impression that government employees are all using floppy disks and programs running on 50-year-old systems. But for the average federal employee, that there are real complaints about technology. The most common complaints were about pretty basic things like you mentioned, like good email programs or sharing tools. What are the issues specifically with email?
I believe the issues are mostly around security and the fear around security and cloud-based emails. I'm not an expert in this particular topic, but it is true. When we did a listening tour when I first came on to understand what's at the forefront of CIOs' problems in their minds, it was the basic tools like sharing documents. And coming from the startup world and coming from the private sector, that's the most basic part of productivity, is being able to open up Google Docs, for example.
Dan, I want to get back to the challenges of upgrading technology in massive federal departments and agencies. Within FEDRA's former portfolio was the Digital Services Agency 18F. What was the idea behind 18F?
The idea behind 18F was to go out and find some of the smartest, most aggressive, most thoughtful people who could actually show the folks in the federal government what the future could actually look like and actually take a look at the business processes necessary for delivering those digital outcomes and hack them and try to find faster and easier ways to get there. The idea was to have at least a kernel of talent within the federal government who understand things like agile development and lean design and UX testing and focus on users so that the federal government could be a better consumer of information technology. It wasn't to replace vendors. It was to just make the federal government a better purchaser of information technology.
Well, we got a tweet from BW who says, a shout out for the 18F folks that are doing outstanding work.
Great.
FEDRA, you describe 18F as being like a startup. Tell us a little bit more about the service and its mission.
Absolutely. When I came on board, I was entrusted to scale this startup. It was about 45 people, and we've grown to 200 people. And as Dan mentioned, they're just incredible technologists from the private sector. I think one of the things we don't realize is that in this black box of government IT, we really exclude people and companies that are on the forefront of technology. And so 18F is a hack for the rest of government, a shared service of a way to get smart people in the door that know what's going to be the future of technology in the door to act as the sophisticated buyer, to act as the advisor, to act as the the people that absorb first mover risk on some of these new technologies.
Nevertheless, Dan, 18F does have something of a controversial reputation within the federal system. Why is that?
I think change is hard. I think the fact is that we actually have a very, very well-established set of routines, set of policies, and frankly, an ecosystem of vendors and people with titles and organizational structures that, while it's not delivering necessarily the best outcomes, it is at least, you know, delivering outcomes or delivering revenue. And so anyone who suggests that maybe this should be disrupted or changed dramatically or even a little, that's gonna create some controversy. And I think 18F hasn't shied away from it. I will actually add something to what Fedra said and say it's some amazing people from the private sector. It's also a lot of amazing people from the public sector who are participating, too. I mean, we recruited from everywhere, all comers, recruiters, and tried to create an environment in which we are really focused on the outcome, on progress, on experimentation, on failing small and fast and learning and iterating. And I think that that goes against, you know, dozens of years of an approach that really focused on the waterfall and on specific deliverables and on multi-year contracts and these global kind of unified field theory type systems that agencies try to buy.
Quite a few people would like to join this conversation. You can, too, by calling 800-433-8850. If you have already called, stay on the line. We're going to get to your call after this short break. But you can also send email to kojo@wamu.org. Do you have outdated legacy systems in your federal government department or agency? You can also shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show or go to our website, kojoshow.org. Join the conversation there. I'm Kojo Namdi.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picoult and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/book club.
Welcome back. We're talking about federal government technology with Fedra Kroussos, Chief Innovation Officer of Libra Group. That's an international business group operating across six sectors. She's the former commissioner of the Technology Transformation Service at the General Services Administration. Dan Tangalini is the president of Seamless Docs Federal, a company which specializes in helping governments go paperless with secure online documents. He's the former administrator of the General Services Administration. We're taking your calls at 800-433-8850. Here is Prasanna in Washington. Prasanna, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Coach. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
So one thing that I wanted to point out is that I've kind of worked in a variety of different Defense Department engineering labs, and I noticed a variety of different IT systems. The place that I work now, the research lab, has a much better system, but the one comment that I kind of wanted to make is the changes that I've seen internally. We have a lot of flexibility to do our research, but I've noticed that it comes from two main things, that it takes senior leadership buy-in, saying that this is the system that we're going to let our engineers use. And the second thing is it takes a lot of work on the bottom to make sure that we do our job to make sure that everything is secure, up and running. But in retrospect, I think we have our system is one of the few systems I've run across that really works well.
Here to comment, Fedra, Dan.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. We were just commenting that, you know, the government has some of the coolest and most sophisticated engineering labs in the world. And you may be sitting in one of them, I'm not sure, and yet email doesn't work, right? Or basic CRM doesn't work. Online appointment booking for veterans doesn't work. So it's an interesting dichotomy in the government, and if you want to add.
No, I think actually you point out a very good point. There are really two major preconditions to a successful technology environment. And one is a leadership precondition, and it sounds like you have it. And then the second is really the flexibility and the autonomy and the ability to experiment at the operational level. And you put those two things together, And given the amount of powerful technology that's available for really very low cost now in the marketplace, you actually have some really exciting opportunities that can manifest themselves.
Which brings me to this question, Phaedra. We mentioned the $80 billion figure that the government spends on technology. That's a lot of money coming from the private sector. That number apparently made your head spin. So why don't all government agencies have the most up-to-date systems in the world? Why don't they all have cool technology and labs?
You know, I think it's something that I also was wondering about. And recently I saw an interesting statistic that helps kind of explain a little bit about what's happening. FedScoop looked at the top 100 federal IT vendors, and we see that 71% of contract income goes to 10 vendors. So this black box of federal IT doesn't only keep out technologists at the forefront of technology, but also keeps out new companies that are at the forefront of technology. So there are things we need to do around procurement, which is a very unsexy topic, but a very important one, to make sure that we have access to leading technology companies that are emerging today.
Indeed, while the government spends a lot of money on technology, you say that much of what's needed is not, well, sexy.
It isn't sexy, but we still need access to cloud-based email. We still need access to CRM. We still need access to all the day-to-day tools that will give us the mind share to actually fulfill our mission-driven objectives.
Dan, what kind of upfront investment would be needed to replace entire systems in a department or in an agency?
I think it's very, very, very agency dependent. And I think that part of the problem is that people actually try to bite off the entirety of the digital process issue. And that's how you make the price tag balloon up into those kind of numbers. I really think that what we need to do is get much more systematic about looking at the business process, breaking it down into its component parts, and seeing what's commercially available, what can be developed, what can be strung together. You know, Frost said poetry is the uncommon arrangement of common words. I think that there's some technological poetry that can happen in these organizations, taking much simpler, much lighter, much more streamlined existing technology, putting it together to try to attack the problem. When we get into trouble is when we take on these big systems. You know, in defense of the government, it serves hundreds of millions of people, hundreds of millions of transactions. So you have to be super careful. When you have something that works, people are super hesitant to do anything, even if it works badly. They're super hesitant to do anything that changes it. And so you have to give people sandboxes. You have to give them a little bit of a playground. You have to be willing to do A/B testing and UX testing. And people have to know what that is. And that's why 18F was founded.
I thought Yogi Berra specialized in the uncommon arrangement of common words. But here is Lawrence in Washington. Lawrence, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, everyone. Couple quick points. I'm really curious. Number one, you've had Republicans in the last 20, 30 years trying to downsize the federal government workforce and cut employee salaries. So how can you say that government IT is bad when you really can't compete with private industry? In other words, if the federal government were paying higher salaries, then maybe you'd get the IT expertise you need. Number one. Number two, I wonder often, you know, technology changes so quickly. So in that sense, if you've got to change systems every 6 months, then you've got to train everyone. Forget the installation piece. How would a government workforce be able to get any work done if they're constantly upgrading systems, constantly doing training? Third, sometimes the systems just don't work. How many times just this year alone have our systems been hacked, either by the Chinese, either by Putin, either by WikiLeaks? And so, again, unless you're going to be able to – I understand what you're doing, and it sounds great in theory, but let's talk about the practical side of this. And
you've got to be fast on your feet, Dan Tangalini.
Well, I actually think the practical side says, look, any government process that relies on a fax machine or an envelope is not being particularly practical in the way that people are used to doing transactions at all. And I would argue that if you really want to stay ahead on the security front, you don't stay in place in the way you're doing your processes, and frankly exposing them to people, you know, continuing testing and pushing. Most of the intrusion that we've seen have actually been on on-prem systems, not on the cloud-based systems, where there is a much higher level of focus of current level security and current level of cyber protection.
I think Dan brings up a good point here. I don't want to geek out too much on this, but if you're interested in this topic, something you should learn about if you don't know already is this concept of government as a platform. How do we rely on the private pieces of the private sector almost as building blocks to build our own systems so that as the private sector progresses, the government actually benefits from that progression? Uber does that, for example. You'd think Uber is a leading technology company. It is, but it relies on Braintree to do its payment processing. It relies on SendGrid to send its emails. It doesn't build these things from scratch or have proprietary technology around this. And I think the government needs to be more like Uber in that sense.
Well, technology is getting cheaper. You get more advanced computing for less money with every new iteration, but it sounds as though the government isn't getting that benefit. Fedra, you say the federal government lacks sophistication as a tech customer. Can you explain what that means?
Yes, it's true. So software today costs 0.7% of what it cost in 1980. And I don't think we've realized those savings in government. A big part of that is not that we don't have really smart people in government. We do. But the people that are in the forefront of technology are in the private sector. So we really need to figure out ways to get these people in the door and to bring them into empowered environments where they can experiment safely and take small risks. And have those people be the sophisticated buyers. One thing that we've tried to refocus 18F on is how do we put engineers and contracting officers together so that when we're buying large systems, we have sophisticated technology buyers at the table with the contracting officers so that we can write an RFP, a request for proposal, in a way that really makes sense to get to the best outcome possible.
Here now is John in Lorton, Virginia, dealing with an issue, Dan, I'm sure you and Fedra had to deal with. John, your turn.
Hi, Kojo. Hi, everyone. How are you?
Very well.
Okay.
We have a question. So I've been in government business for quite some time in the military, and every year it's the same thing come around this time where we have what we have and we have to spend it by the end of September. What effect do you see in the IT world that this particular landscape that is completely unavoidable for bright people, motivated people who want to see the government do efficiency well, it seems like we're all hamstrung by this fiscal cycle. What are your thoughts about this?
Yeah.
So I actually think that that's part of the president's budget proposal on the TTS is to create a revolving fund that allows for multi-year investment and then paid back with the savings. In an equivalent kind of level of geek out, we could talk about why that's running into scoring problems on the appropriations side, and then we're running into problems with appropriations, period. But I think, you know, the point you make is one I've seen in every level of government I worked in. When you get to the end of the fiscal year, everyone's trying to scrape out every bit of change that's between the couch cushions and spend it. And what happens is you don't buy strategic things, you just buy tactical things, and you generally invest on top of the lack of strategic investments you made before. So it's bad tactic on top of bad tactic, multiplied over years. And then you throw into it what Fedra was pointing out, the speed of progression of technology has picked up. And so you're making investments in technology that's multi-generations behind. Mm-hmm.
Fedra, much of what we do is moving to the cloud, but the government has been slow to do so. What are some of the issues with that?
Right now, we have a security authorization process for systems that hold data on the cloud, and it's called FedRAMP. This process is in the Technology Transformation Service. It's run by a great team that recently did some really interesting customer journey maps to try and get this process down from an average of 12 months leading up to 18 months, which is really unsustainable for private sector companies, down to under 4 months. And I'm really proud to announce that in this spring, they actually announced the new process and had the first few companies start to go through that process. So I think 4 months is still a long time for the private sector, but it's definitely better than before, and we'll continue to speed up security authorization around the cloud.
Dan, in the minute or so we have left, big picture. President Obama promised the most transparent, open government through technology 8 years in. Is that what we have, and what should we expect from the next administration?
I actually hope the next administration will build on some of the foundational work that was done in this administration, maintaining the U.S. Digital Service, reinforcing the support for 18F, pushing hard on the TTS and seeing if maybe in the first 100 days they can get that that revolving fund through.
Dan Tangalini is the president of Seamless Docs Federal. That's a company that specializes in helping governments go paperless with secure online documents. He's the former administrator of the General Services Administration. Dan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Fedra Cruzos is the chief innovation officer of Libra Group, an international business group operating across 5+1 sectors. 6 sectors. She's the former commissioner of the Technology Transformation Service and the General Services Administration. Fedra, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
That's it for the show today, but remember, there's always more happening in person and online. If you'd like to hear the full interview that we did yesterday with Ethiopian Olympic marathoner and activist Feyisa Lilesa, the entire interview is available at kojoshow.org. You can hear him speak in his native Oromo language. And don't miss tonight's event. Armando Trull makes his WAMU In Your Bookstore debut at the Busboys and Poets at 14th and V Streets Northwest in D.C. He'll be talking with Julissa Arce. She's an undocumented immigrant who became a Wall Street executive. He'll talk to her about her memoir. Details available at WAMU.org/events. And be sure you never miss a show by subscribing via your favorite podcast app. However you listen, be sure to meet us back here tomorrow at noon. We'll discuss why we keep discovering culture that's been there all along, like Vietnamese pho and mumbo sauce. Plus, award-winning food and culture writer Monica Bidet is around. She'll be with us tomorrow talking about her new novel, Karma and the Art of Buttered Chicken. That's all coming up tomorrow at noon. Until then, thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nandi.
The Kojo Nandi Show is produced by Michael Martinez, Ingelise Trobsdorf, Kayla Burney, Ruth Tam, and Avery Kleinman. The engineer is Meg Bunting. Podcasts of all shows and audio archives are available at our website, kojoshow.org.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Nnamdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.